WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Rita Dove is only the second African-American woman to win the Pulitzer Prize for poetry. She won it in 1987 for her collection, Thomas and Beulah. Her other books of poetry are Grace Notes, Fifth Sunday, and The Yellow House on the Corner. Rita Dove has written her first novel, and it's called Through the Ivory Gate. It's about Virginia King, who returns to her hometown of Akron, Ohio, to be an artist in residence at a local elementary school. This coming home opens up a flood of memories about her childhood. I asked Rita Dove to read a section of her novel where young Virginia King remembers a favorite doll she loved called Penelope.
Then there was Penelope. Penelope with the long red hair and plump good looks of Brenda Starr. Penelope of the creamy skin and dimpling cheeks. Aunt Carrie had bought her. Aunt Carrie said she was cute as a penny. She thought up the name. There were also small pink curlers and a comb. Wash and set and place her in the sun to dry. As many as 5 hairstyles a day. Penelope the model. Penelope the God-fearing nurse. Penelope the prize-winning journalist. Penelope the girl next door. Penelope had a man and he loved her so. Never a hair out of place unless she shook it loose to let it stream in the wind. Virginia gave her a ride on her bicycle to make sure it streamed. That summer was Virginia's 9th birthday. Birthdays had their ritual. She was allowed to drink coffee for breakfast, and she chose the dinner menu, chicken and applesauce and pork and beans. She bicycled to Maury's grocery for a dime's worth of candy buttons and ate them all. Then she took Penelope to the park. When she got back, it was nearly dinner time. The kitchen clanged and hissed. She had gone upstairs and just laid Penelope on the bed when her mother appeared in the doorway holding a shiny yellow package. "Something you've always wanted," she said, "from Grandma." Virginia ripped the waxy gift paper away. In a blue display box lay a doll in a seersucker play suit. It had brown skin. It looked like an overturned crab. And the eyes didn't close, and, she felt tears coming, it had no hair. Those blistered, painted curlicues on that bulbous scalp could not be called hair. "Just think, honey, now you finally have a doll who looks like you." "I don't want it," backing away as the doll was thrust into her arms. "What do you mean you don't want it? Honey, where are you going? What are you doing? Don't you dare!" Virginia threw the doll down the stairs. Her father came running, newspaper fluttering at his ankles. "What's all the commotion about?" he demanded. "Oh, nothing," her mother said. "Nothing at all, except that your daughter is ashamed of being a Negro. Look what she did to my mother's birthday present. She obviously prefers that fat redhead to her own color." She shook Penelope in Virginia's face. "Do you know what you're telling us?" Belle spoke under her breath, but her voice was hard and shiny as scales. "You're saying you don't appreciate this doll. Your grandmother goes half across town to buy you the first Negro baby doll, and you throw a fit. You throw her down the stairs like dirty laundry. You don't want it? You don't like it? You don't like being a Negro? For years we've fought so there would be Negro dolls for our children, and you'd rather play with..." "Stop it, Belle." Her father knelt down, took her gently by the shoulders. "Why did you throw Grandma's doll down the stairs?" he asked sadly. His hair smelled like ginger ale and fresh-cut grass. She knew it was just his hair pomade, but she couldn't help thinking it came directly from him, like a magician's smoke, a halo of scent. "Tell me," he said, "what it is you don't like about the doll." He took the doll away from her mother and held it out quietly. Virginia stared at it, the bulging eyes, the painted head. She didn't look like that. And if she did, how could her own parents stand there and tell her so? How could they love her and show her at the same time that she was ugly? "All right," he sighed. "Maybe you need a little time to think it over. I have a suggestion. Keep this doll for a day. Play with it for one day, and then, if you still don't like it, We'll take it back. No questions asked. Okay? You tell us you don't like it. We'll take it back. He put the doll on the bed. Come on, Belle.
That's Rita Dove reading from her latest book, her first novel, and it's called Through the Ivory Gate. Do you remember feeling that way about white dolls and black dolls when you were little?
Yes, I did, because when I was little, the black dolls that were available weren't even the spray-painted Barbie dolls that, you know, they have now. They were, the only ones they really had were the infants, and they didn't have movable arms and legs, and they kind of lay there really like an overturned crab. And when I began to really play with dolls, I was older, and I wanted a doll that I could do things with. So these dolls, which were pretty immobile and pretty functionaries, actually, of dolldom, I guess you could say, they didn't appeal to me. And I'm still looking for a doll that really looks like a black person.
I don't still, think I, in 1992,
in
you're looking for a doll?
In 1992, in the United States of America, I'm still looking for one. I did find one once in East Berlin, because it was a doll that was modeled after Cuban features. And, you know, but I've never found one here that really looks like a black person. They look often like...
Well, what, they look like the stereotype of a black person?
No,
are they
don't.
Or they look like a...
They look like a white doll that's just spray-painted, you know, black. You know, that kind of thing.
What you've described is such a loaded scene, because here's a little girl and she just wants what she wants. She doesn't really know about the world. She has this doll that she likes that she can use, do stuff with her hair. And yet, for her parents, it's a very loaded issue, this black doll, this
mm-hmm.
present.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real conflicting situation.
Yes, it is a conflicting situation. And it's also, it's as you said, it's very complicated for the parents who aren't really looking at this through the child's eyes. They see mainly this is a doll that, you know, represents the black race, and it's wonderful. For the girl, it has nothing to do with skin color whatsoever. She's saying, this is not a good doll. It's not one I can do anything with. And it's further complicated by the fact that that Virginia has already been chastised by her grandmother earlier, because she had liked a doll once, and it was a black Sambo doll, and she just thought it was a bright and cheerful looking doll, had not really realized what the entire story of Little Black Sambo was. So for her, in a way, this doll with its eyes that didn't close was another Sambo doll.
Rita Dove is a poet and novelist. Her latest book is called Through the Ivory Gate. We'll talk more after a quick break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is novelist and poet Rita Dove. Well, I want to have you read a poem, and this is from a book of your poems called Grace Notes, and it's one called Flashcards.
Okay. Flashcards. In math, I was the whiz kid, keeper of oranges and apples. What you don't understand, master, my father said. The faster I answered, the faster they came. I could see one bud on the teacher's geranium, one clear bee sputtering at the wet pane. The tulip trees always dragged after heavy rain, so I tucked my head as my boots slapped home. My father put up his feet after work and relaxed with a highball and the Life of Lincoln. After supper, we drilled, and I climbed the dark before sleep, before a thin voice hissed numbers as I spun on a wheel. I had to guess. 10, I kept saying. I'm only 10.
Hmm. What did your parents want you to be?
A lawyer.
A lawyer. How far did you get?
Not very. I was, you know, it was odd because I think they never, ever said you should be a lawyer, but I knew it. And I went to university, actually, and registered as pre-law, took my first government class and dropped it, and thought, no, this will never be me, and then spent some time kind of saying I was pre-law, but actually doing English. To my parents' credit, though, when I finally came home and I was a junior in college by this time, and I knew that it's when things narrow down, you have to really admit what you're doing. I came home and said I want to be a poet. My father just put down his newspaper and said, well, I don't understand poetry. Don't be upset if I don't read it. And that was enough. It was a pact.
And do they read your poetry? I can't imagine that they don't.
I think they do. Yes.
You're married to a white man.
Yes.
I know that.
Yes.
Was that a difficult thing for your family to accept?
No, I was surprised. And I say I was surprised simply because by that time I had known something of the things that my mother and my father had gone through, and I thought that that would be a problem. They were mostly concerned that I would be happy and that I wouldn't be taken advantage of. I think that they were apprehensive at first. My husband is German, and interestingly enough, then, does not have some of the kinds of feelings of guilt and the kinds of hang-ups that I think some white American men have concerning race and concerning interracial relationships. And so those kind of rubs, the things that you hear about, are non-existent in our marriage. It's very...
Because he doesn't have the history that white men living in this country
have, yes. And so he can look at it more objectively. And it's really been fascinating to watch to watch this absence of that. I think it's really refreshing. My parents had no problem. So I was cautious, but what attracted me to him immediately, he's a novelist, and we just seemed to have so much to talk about, and there was none of that ill-at-easeness, you know? He liked me.
That surprised you?
Yes, just a bit.
And I wonder, you live in Virginia, and you live in the States now, how if you can gauge how people look at you. And we were talking about the difference between individuals and how people are viewed as groups, and whether you find people look, as you walk down the street, do people look at you?
They used to do that a lot more. And what I have discovered is that it's interesting. People look more in the North than they do in the South. It's incredible, but they really
do. Why is that, do you think?
Yeah.
And I'll say I look, I'll tell you why. At least I consciously understand it. Is part of it, I think, is curiosity. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an innocent look. It's like, let's see how they look together.
Mm-hmm.
What does that picture look like to me?
Right. Yeah, I have not quite sorted it out yet. I'm not quite sure why this happens. I do think that in the South, Blacks and whites have had more time together, for better or for worse. I mean, and in some ways are more comfortable. And this is odd, more comfortable with their differences. And in this, I'm talking, of course, about people who are not bigots or racists or something like that. Whereas in the North, I think we exist side by side sometimes, and really do not socialize together. Really do not. Have opportunity to talk in any other ways than business, you know, fashion. So that to see an interracial couple together, it's like, this is interesting.
What about for your child, who's a daughter, who's 9 years
old? She's nine now, and she has a remarkable sense of self-esteem. I mean, I don't know, and I don't want to predict any difficulties for her. But to her, she feels, as she says, well, I'm golden. Mm. And I thought, fine, go right ahead. And I find that among her classmates and things like that, they accept her purely for who she is. I do a lot of stuff in the schools, too, and both my husband and I go in and stuff. And sure, kids will ask, well, how come you're, and you're, and we say, well, you know, look at her. This is what comes out, you know, and they go, oh, that's pretty interesting. Some of that may have to do with being in a university environment as well. Charlottesville, Virginia is a university town. But she does have a very strong sense of herself, and I think that will help her through.
So you're raising her to be golden and to be black, to be white?
I'm raising her to be both. That's what she is. And she has, you know, she knows both of them. And she feels... I see her, you know, work with both or play with both black and white children, and there's no difference. It's just, it's interesting to see. I really am curious to know what will happen when she reaches dating age.
You won the Pulitzer Prize for poetry a couple of years ago, the second African American to do so. What was that like for you to win that? And again, I mean, to be the second black poet to win.
Well, you know, when I caught my breath, which took about a year, I thought to myself, it's really a shame that it took this long. Gwendolyn Brooks got the Pulitzer Prize in 1950, I think, or 51. When I got the Pulitzer Prize, I was completely unprepared for it. I did not know that I was in the running or that I was close. And it really was like being a private person 1 minute and then having someone throw open the door and turn on the lights and say, here's the world.
Rita Dove is a poet and now a novelist. Her first novel has just been published, and it's called Through the Ivory Gate. This is Fresh Air.